It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your watch? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet, a prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the sexy. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, night coast and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them. Never write about me like him. Never make me sit on.
When you're a fan of the Cleveland Browns, it feels like the NFL draft process takes an eternity. The draft, it seems like we've been talking draft, thinking draft since basically since September when the Browns lost their first game of the year and then ended up going 1-15. We were thinking draft that whole time, and now the season's been over for a few months and it's still all about the NFL draft. Well, guess what, y'all? The NFL draft is on Thursday, and we have our draft expert Mark Hicks in the building once again to come at us with another Mark Draft. It's the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, y'all. The preseason podcast of the year. We're back again. This is Jay Hicks on the mic. Big shout out to Jabari Davis, who joined us last week to talk NBA playoffs. I wish we could had time to talk about that, man, but we got so much stuff to talk about with football. We're just going to dive right into it. But again, shout out to the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Go ahead and check us out there. And of course, you can find the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Make sure y'all go ahead and download, comment, and subscribe to the podcast. Appreciate that. Now, Mark, how you doing this evening?
What's up, cousin? Merry Browns Christmas to you and all you Browns fans out there. It's our time of year.
It's our time of year, man. I mean, this is our time to shine. Like, nobody knows draft analysis like a Browns fan. We are, like, forget Mel Kiper. You know, if you're a Browns fan, you might as well have a certified master's degree in NFL draftology or something like that. I mean, this is what right. We do. We don't know nothing about the playoffs. Nothing about the playoffs.
We definitely know about the draft, and we all should have doctorates at some point with all of this.
Absolutely, seriously. Absolutely. And no team knows how to mess up a draft like the Cleveland Browns. Well, guess what? The Browns are on the clock, okay? They pick first in the 2017 NFL draft, which, again, is Thursday. And just for bookkeeping purposes, again, today is Saturday, April 22nd. We're recording this on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. Yeah, man, the Browns, let's jump right into it now. But actually, before we get into who the Browns are going to take, there's a certain player that I wanted to talk about. And before I even talk about that player, quick introduction as to the mock draft for those who are unaware. The mock draft, we know mock drafts are meaningless. We know they're all based on hearsay and false information, and people just spit them out anyways as if there's any relevance to them whatsoever, and there isn't. So we have Mark Hicks, our draft expert, come on the podcast every year and do his mock draft, which is not who he thinks each team will pick in the draft, but who they should pick in the draft at that spot. So if he were running the team, what they would do with that pick, what they should do with that pick if he were running a team, you know. And he's smart, and a lot of these guys running teams aren't. So this is what we have here. We have the Mark Draft, named after the incomparable Mark Hicks. So, but before we get to the picks, though, Jimmy Garoppolo has been a hot name in the city of Cleveland. It's been a hot name on our group chat text message with our cousins and
man,
brothers.
You know what? You could do an actual podcast with just our group text chat, man. Because stuff
it's
is
legendary.
Way interesting than anything we could put on a podcast.
It's legendary. Shout out to Mike Hicks, who's a friend of the podcast. He's been on it before. Your brother Vince Hicks, my brother Kenneth Hicks, frequent contributor to HHSR. We love y'all and appreciate everything that y'all do, because y'all help keep us sharp. But There's been a little bit of a divide on the Jimmy Garoppolo debate. Let's get right into it. Mark, you are anti Jimmy Garoppolo. Not that you think he's a terrible player or anything like that, but you don't really want him for the Browns. You don't think it's wise for the Browns to take him or to even trade for him or look at him or anything like that. I'm in the other camp. I believe that he would be a tremendous asset to the Browns. Why are you against Jimmy G?
I am against Jimmy G basically because he like other quarterbacks who have been traded, I get nervous when I'm, especially when I'm giving up a boatload of picks for somebody who, in this particular case, has only played six quarters of meaningful football. I'm not going to count preseason and all that stuff, but he's only played six quarters. My concern is, I mean, I've seen a lot of these guys come and go. Back in the day, the Detroit Lions had a backup quarterback named Scott Mitchell, who came out of nowhere and actually played his first game when the Browns played Miami. Dan Marino got hurt, and he came in. He lit up the Browns, and he played only a couple of games, just like Jimmy Garoppolo. And then Detroit saw that and was like, wow, we got to get this guy. And they paid him a massive contract, and that guy stunk. And you can go to countless other quote unquote backup quarterbacks or one hit wonders.
Rob Johnson comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. And you rode the Brinks truck to them, and they just underperformed. And I get nervous about that, especially in a situation where, you know, if I'm the Patriots and I know and I have the GOAT on my team like I do in Tom Brady, and I know at any point in time. You know, and you know as well as anybody that from a quarterback position, you can go from the best to the worst in a blink of an eye. I mean, your skills could roll it instantly, and you just don't know when it's going to happen. And if I know I have a blue chipper in my pocket, a guy who's been in my system now for basically 3 years, who I've been grooming behind the best quarterback in football history, and it's just, and you know, and you have confidence in that at any point in time, if Brady is hurt or if he falters, that I can stick this guy in and there's no significant drop off. Why would I want to get rid of him? I mean, and you could say that, or you could always get a draft another quarterback and do it, but why take that chance? I mean, it's a luxury to have, and I wouldn't want to do it if I'm Belichick and the Patriots. And then from the Browns standpoint, you need to develop your own guy. I'm so sick and tired of them trying to take somebody else's stuff. They need to be confident in the people that they have. The problem is the Browns have never had anybody stay there long enough to develop his system and long enough for a quarterback to develop in that system. We've changed quarterbacks at least on a rotation basis every two to 3 years. And from that standpoint, it's hard to get any type of an established system for a quarterback to follow. They need to dig in and they need to draft their own guy. Put them in their own system and develop their own Jimmy Garoppolo. So I'm not against Jimmy Garoppolo, the player. I'm against the thought of having to go and grab somebody else's stuff when you should be confident enough as a franchise to develop your own player.
Okay, so
that's the only thing for me.
Okay, and understood. Now, a couple things I want to point out. You said, why would the Patriots get rid of him? Well, the Patriots would get rid of him because I don't know if his draft stock is going to be any higher than it is right now. Tom Brady has only missed, since he became the starter, he missed one season off of a knee injury, and he's taken every other snap other than that for the Patriots for the last 15 years, with the exception of a BS suspension that he got last year. So Jimmy G...
Shout out Roger Goodell.
Right. So Jimmy G, you know, based on history tells us that Jimmy G is not going to get in the game next year. His stock is probably at its apex right now, and he's on his rookie deal for one more season, and he's going to be a free agent next year. So the Patriots are going to have to be at a crossroads this time next year, trying to understand whether or not they want to sign into a franchise tag, which you really wouldn't want to franchise a backup quarterback. That's a poor money management or resources. And again, they can actually get a team like the Browns to trade the farm for Jimmy G right now. And they're not going to reach a point where they're going to obtain any more picks and or whatever it is that they get back than they would for Garoppolo at this point. So that's the reason why they would move off of him right now. You know, I mean, I to me, and then here's the other thing. If And I hear what you're saying about, you know, we have to get our guy. I mean, I don't care as much about that. Like, I would rather, I mean, don't get me wrong. I would prefer us speaking as a Browns fan, I would prefer us to draft the guy, build him up, and make him into a great star. But, hey, man, we haven't had a quarterback since Bernie. Okay, I'll take a quarterback any way I can get it. I don't care if he came. I don't care if he's somebody else's leftovers. One man's trash is another man's treasure. Drew Brees was the Chargers' trash, and he became the Saints' treasure and took him to the Super Bowl. I don't care nothing about that. You know what I'm saying? I'll take it any way I can get it. The Browns are in no position to leave any stone unturned. They have to go out and get their quarterback however they can find him. Now,
unlike these other so-called experts and everything, I feel that there is a quarterback in this class that is worth drafting and building around.
Okay, we're going to get to that.
My problem is that these guys, you know, I hate the term franchise quarterback. That irritates me more than anything, because the biggest argument now, they say, well, if you put Jimmy Garoppolo or Kirk Cousins in this draft, they would be drafted like number one or number two. Of course they would. You got 3 years of experience at least. You have, and in Kirk Cousins' case, you have multiple playoff games and regular season games. Of course they're going to be ranked higher than a kid that's coming out of college that's a redshirt sophomore or a junior or a senior. Of course, that's like apples and oranges. I get very irritated when they sit up there and tell me, or they try to hoodwink me by telling me, okay, if I put this guy in this draft today, how he's going to look? Well, if I put one of these quarterbacks, if they turn out to be good in this draft again in three years from now, yeah, they're going to be picked higher too. Same thing with Derek Carr, who got picked in the second round. If I would put him in this draft today, yeah, he's going to be picked first or second. Because why? Because he's proven it on that level. None of these guys have proven on the level or had a chance to prove it on this level.
That's a good reason. That's a feather in the cap for Jimmy Garoppolo, though. Because Jimmy Garoppolo, I know you downplayed the six quarters of actual game action that he's played, and, you know, understandably so. I get where you're coming from on that. But the difference between Garoppolo and these other dudes that are coming out is we've seen Jimmy Garoppolo excel on the NFL level in an NFL game that counts. That has to count for something, because his six quarter of experience is more experience than any of these other dudes have. I value his six quarters against the Cardinals and Dolphins over Deshaun Watson's experience in college going up against Alabama, because half of them dudes aren't even going to make it to the NFL or at least start.
But I would say the same thing about Jimmy G and his play at Eastern Illinois and playing against the teams that he played against. So, I mean, you could only play, or you can only be valued or ranked or scrutinized about the teams that you played against. All I know is I've seen, like you brought up Deshaun Watson, I've seen Deshaun Watson two consecutive years play against who is considered one of the best college teams in the last 30 years. Matter of fact, and then they heralded their defense as being one of the best defensive teams to ever step on a college football field, with blue chip NFL talent, and he not only torched them, but in the end up winning the game and winning the national championship on his shoulders. So I can only go by what I see, and I didn't see that in college from Jimmy Garoppolo. I didn't see that, but I saw that from Deshaun Watson in college. So if you put him in the right situation, yeah, he could. He not only do I feel he could be as good as Jimmy G, but he could be better than Jimmy G if he goes to the right team and have the right.
He could be better than Jimmy G, but like I said, we've seen Jimmy Garoppolo do it in the NFL. We have not seen Deshaun Watson or anybody else do it in the NFL. And I think that given the fact that the Patriots, you know, Belichick, he's almost 70 years old. Tom Brady's almost 40 years old. These dudes are not going to be around forever. They might as well collect all the rings they can and get out, you know, like the ski mask way.
They all going to get out one way or the other. They're going to get fired. They're going to retire. Yeah,
but they're going to get it in the ski mask way. And they're going to rip off a few teams along the way if necessary. They know nobody is going to be taking snaps instead of Brady at quarterback. They might as well get some other resources. You know, Belichick loves his depth. Get as much resources as they can, get another ring or two out of it, and get out, man, and retire. I mean, look at it like this. If Tom Brady retired today, we know that the New England Patriots would move forward with Jimmy Garoppolo as their starting quarterback and would be fine with it.
Without question.
I don't think they're going to be looking for another quarterback. They're not going to be drafting a quarterback of the future. They already have their guy. This is what is considered to be the greatest coach in the modern era. This is the greatest quarterback of all time. Garoppolo's been under the tutelage of both guys. He's been under the tutelage of Josh McDaniels, one of the better offensive coordinators in recent years in the league. He's been he's studying at their feet for 3 years.
Right.
And they're going to move forward with Jimmy G if Brady wasn't there. So why is it – I don't get the notion that – that guy is good enough for that franchise and that coach, but not good enough for the Browns. I just refuse to believe that.
I'm not saying he's not good enough for the Browns. My thing is that you just mentioned all the things that a quarterback needs to be successful. Wherever quarterback that's coming out, you need to have talent, both internal talent by the quarterback themselves and talent around him. You need to have coaching. You need to have, especially in particular, an offensive coordinator or an offensive-minded head coach that's going to get the best out of that young quarterback. And number three, opportunity. Those three things have to happen in order for a quarterback to be good. Because I can guarantee you now, nobody talked and said anything about Dak Prescott being a starting NFL quarterback. But all those three things happened because he had both the talent internally and around him. He had a great coach in Jason Garrett, and he had an opportunity to play because Tony Romo got hurt. Those things have to happen. You're not going to be able to get that. You're not going to be able to get that with every single body. You're going to have one or two, or maybe even all three of those things not present, and that's why a quarterback doesn't become successful. So my thing is that, no, Jimmy G has the opportunity to be a very good quarterback with somebody, okay? Whether it's New England or somebody else. My thing is that I get irritated at the fact that you have to go ahead and get a guy like that instead of digging in your heels and getting your scouts and all of your general managers, everybody else off the hook, and not just go ahead and getting your own guy developing him yourself, because you have the piece. You need to have to determine and have the piece around him. Because even if you get Jimmy G and you don't have the talent around him and you don't have a good enough coaching and you don't have and you have all the opportunity in the world and you're still not going to be successful. So my thing is, if you're going to do all of that, you might as well get your own guy, develop your own guy, build your own guy, and just go from there. I don't see what the problem is from that.
Okay, well, be that as it may. And we'll have to call it. We'll have to end that debate right there. We haven't even gotten any picks yet, y'all. We just still okay. Be that as it may. So, with the first pick, the Cleveland Browns are on the clock now. If you're running the Browns, Mark, what should they do with that top pick? It sounds like you're saying they should take a quarterback, possibly Deshaun Watson, number one. What do you think they should do, or should they trade out of it? What's your move there?
They need to take blue chippers. I'm tired of them traded down. Every time they trade down, it fails miserably. You got to get blue chippers. You got to get talent. So they're going to select Myles Garrett. And for the emphasis of this mock draft, I'm going to also have them selecting Myles Garrett. I am not 100% sold on Myles Garrett personally, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't think from looking at him personally. And also looking at him with all the different the stats and everything that he's done, I don't think that his production matches up with his talent. So I did some research on Myles Garrett real quickly.
Lay it on us.
And I looked at him. So he
because I got a lot to say about Myles Garrett too. So go ahead and lay it on us though.
Okay, so he played in 34 total games. He has 81 solo tackles, 60 assisted tackles, 141 total tackles, okay?
All right.
47 of them for loss, 32 and a half sacks, okay?
All right.
So I broke down some sacks down in particular. So the sacks that he had 18 sacks on teams that's not from the SEC. In particular, he had 16 sacks from Lamar, Rice, Louisiana Monroe, Nevada, and University of Texas San Antonio.
He feasted on Rice.
16 of those sacks from them. Yes. All the wins, I mean, and the biggest one was the 4.5 sacks that he had versus University of Texas San Antonio. So, and then when I look at the SEC, on the flip side, he's played in a grand total of, I believe it's 20 games against the SEC. And he's only registered in those 20 games. He's registered 12 sacks.
And this is over 3 years.
This is the thing. It's not just like one or two seasons. This is over 3 years.
Well, and let
and
me
the most And the most sacks he's had is 2 sacks against South Carolina and Auburn. And both of those happened. One happened in 2015 and one happened in 2016.
And what was your point? This is a point that you raised about Garrett before. And it's funny because I'm looking back at my notes. We did all that talking about Jimmy G, and we didn't even get into Kirk Cousins. You know what I'm saying? But that's okay.
Right.
You don't want the Browns to trade for a veteran. I'm cool with that, and I'm not really a Kirk Cousins guy either. But
I'm not either. But okay. Yeah, that's a whole other story.
So one point that you raised that I thought was a brilliant point, and this kind of some people have kind of used this point to try to describe what the Browns are going to do quarterback wise because they passed on Carson Wentz last year. But oh my God, I'm watching the game right now, and John Wall just made the play of the year almost.
I saw that too.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Anyway, y'all see that. But anyway, the point about Joey Bosa, though, is that you raised. Go ahead and bring that to us right quick, because I thought that was a fantastic point that you brought up a little while back.
I appreciate that. Because here's the thing I was looking at. So everybody gets, like you said, got on the Browns for passing on Carson Wentz. We went at a huge debate about Carson Wentz, you know, a couple years ago when he was coming out. And then pass on him, and now they'd still have to search for their quarterback. Well, they also passed up on another blue-chip talent, and that name was Joey Bosa. And I look at Joey Bosa, and I look at his college career, and I ask this question to you know, you and my brother and the rest of the cousins. I asked this question. I said, from a heralded college football standpoint, who was the bigger name at their position? Was it Joey Bosa or Myles Garrett? And everybody to a man said Joey Bosa. So if you are the Browns, why in the world would you pass on the guy who ended up not only missing the first 2 games of the year and still end up winning rookie defensive of the year, and I think it was 10.5 sacks that he had last year. And
he had a lot.
Why? What's that?
He had a lot of them. I don't know how many he had, but he had a lot of them.
Yeah, he had a ton of them. He won defensive rookie of the year and not play the full season, and yet you're going to pass on him to go and get a guy in Myles Garrett who, like I said, who's had production, but against who you guys, everybody ranks as the best conference in football is the SEC, which I think is bogus. But that's nevertheless, that's another soapbox for another day. But you pass on Joey Bosa from Ohio State, and who had a decorated college career. You pass on him, and you select a guy, you're going to select a guy from the SEC who did not have great games against the teams in that conference. I have a problem with that. I have an issue with that.
Yeah.
When his best games come against teams like Lamar and Rice and Louisiana Monroe, I have a problem with that.
So I have a problem with a lot of things about Myles Garrett, and I'm just going to put it out there right now. I think Myles Garrett is going to be a bust in the NFL.
I have a feeling that too, unfortunately.
And when I say bust, that doesn't necessarily mean he'll be a terrible player, but he's not going to live up to the hype. I've heard people leading up to the draft call Myles Garrett a generational pass rusher, as in he's a once-in-a-generation type talent rushing the quarterback. I don't see
that. And his name was Courtney Brown, too.
Well, absolutely. He was a workout warrior, Courtney Brown was. And
yes, he
and he didn't produce on the field, and he couldn't stay healthy, and that was a whole other thing about 15 years ago. When I see Myles Garrett, I there's a lot that I don't like, and I'm trying my best to be objective about it and not, you know, sit back in my own beliefs and then just use everything that I see just to fuel my own predetermined beliefs about him. But
right.
I look at the fact. And like I said, I think he's just going to be – he's not going to just live up to the hype. He might not be a terrible player, but he's just not going to live up to it. He wants to be the greatest football player ever. And funny, because DeShone Kizer kind of said some other comments that were off the wall this week. But anytime somebody says that, like, I mean, it sounds really good, but I find it hard to believe that most of these guys believe that. A lot of these guys don't love football, and – what every general manager should be trying to do is trying to find guys that love football. That's kind of the objective here, right?
I agree with that.
If you find a guy that, I mean, a guy that might not have as much talent but loves the game, it's probably going to go further than the opposite.
I agree.
Myles Garrett called himself the greatest player ever. Basically, everything he's done since the combine has seemed scripted or seemed like a PR move.
And you're exactly right, because he's trying to get drafted to number one overall.
Right.
Not about anything else. He's trying to get drafted that'd be the first pick in this draft, and that's what he's saying all the right things so that he can get drafted first by the Browns.
And I'll give you an example. So Myles Garrett dominates the combine, and after the combine, everybody's like, whoa. Cleveland Browns, just hand in the card, and that's the guy, right? And I understand why everybody would say that just looking at the measurables, even though guys like you and I and Booger McFarland pointed out that he was kind of slacking against some better competition. But
I agree.
But after he dominates the combine, he has his pro day. And what does he do? He runs the 40 again at his pro day. Now, he crushed the 40 at the combine, but he goes to his pro day. He even has a pro day, which he didn't really need to do. He has one, and then he crushes the 40 again. But the fact that he ran it again had everybody afterwards saying, well, you got to love Myles Garrett's competitiveness. This kid wants to be great. This kid ran the 40, and then he ran it again. And I'm just sitting back like, really? Like, that's like, I don't think that that's a proper measuring stick for determining somebody's desire. Like,
desire to play. Yeah. No, it's his desire to be drafted first.
Exactly.
Overall.
Like, I think that this dude and his people and his camp, they have perfected going through the draft process. Now, there were some rocky moments early on when he said dumb stuff like, I don't want to play in cold weather, knowing damn well the Browns is going to get the number one pick. Then he goes on the camera and says he wants the Cowboys to package Tony Robo in some picks and send it to Cleveland so he can play for the Dallas Cowboys. And then he comes back and says, oh, y'all take everything too seriously. You know, I was just joking.
I have a problem with that.
I don't think he was joking.
You brought up Booger McFarland, too. The fact that he heard the statements that Booger McFarland made and were accurate statements, very accurate statements. And then when he was supposed to appear on Mike and Mike, and Booger McFarland was actually in studio, he was actually going to be a part of the interview.
He choked the deuces.
And he declined to do it. To me, that's the sign of what I like to call a mental midget. I think he's overly concerned about his draft status and he's overly concerned about what people are saying about him. At the end of the day, if people are going to criticize me, I want to meet those guys head on. I want to hear what you have to say. For him to avoid having that conversation with him, and all that he, my thing is that the fact that he avoided it altogether, didn't want to talk to him, just speaks mentally weak to me. I have a problem with guys like that.
Yeah, and I didn't like that. I didn't like the fact that he seemed not to put forth any effort whatsoever during his bowl game. I mean, he played. I mean, at least some guys didn't even play. He played, but I mean, you couldn't tell watching the film. He barely had an impact on the game at all.
He should have sat. Honestly, he should have sat down. He should have did the Chris McCaffrey and not even play. He should have just sat down.
I mean,
him being out there, he really didn't do anything.
He didn't do anything, but kind of confirmed some suspicions that some people already had about him. So he did that. If you go back and look at his highlights, if you look at his highlights on YouTube, a lot of his highlights are coming against blown assignments on the offensive line. Like, he just rushes off the edge unblocked and tackles the guy.
Right.
And it's like, what a pass rusher, Myles Garrett. And it's like, nah, man, like, show me the highlights where he, like, did the Reggie White and just clubbed the dude with his left arm and, like, threw an offensive lineman that weighs 300 pounds to the ground with one arm and tackled the quarterback with the other arm. Show me that highlight. I didn't see that highlight. All I saw was Myles Garrett running in and tackling guys unblocked. There was a lot of that, you know, and there was – and just – when you package all this stuff together – I just don't see a star pass rusher, man. I just don't. I don't think he's going to be as good as Clowney. I don't think he's going to be as good as J.J. Watt. I've heard statistics that they're called splash plays or whatever, which is like hurries plus, you know, knockdowns plus sacks and everything else. And they said his splash play rate or percentage or number of splash plays that he made is way down compared to the other guys in his class. I've heard that there's other pass rushers. There's Solomon Thomas and the guy from Tennessee whose name slips my mind. Like, these guys are
Derek Barnett.
Thank you. These guys are better football players than Myles Garrett. I think Myles Garrett, he looks the part on paper. He looks the part with his shirt off. He looks like everything you would want in a football player, but I don't see it, man. I just don't. I personally think he looks like
Tarzan and plays like Jane. That's
like Tarzan and he plays like Jane. And I don't think he's, you know, there's productions there, but like you said, if you peel off the mask, you can see that it was against inferior comp. Some people said he was playing hurt, man. I just don't buy it. I just don't. We've spent way too much time already. Let's jump into the second pick. So having said all that, you still have the Browns picking Myles Garrett if you were running the Browns. You would still pick Myles Garrett, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because the only reason why
you're not going to get fired if he fails.
If I actually could, if I trusted the shoulders of this individual, I would take Jonathan Allen number one overall if it was me. I think he is by far the best defensive player in this draft, but his shoulders concern me, and it would scare me to death to take him at one. Okay. That's the only reason why I would have Myles Garrett taken at one, because of the fact of the injuries to both shoulders of Jonathan Allen. Because Jonathan Allen, in my opinion, is a football player. You can play him on any part of that defensive line, and he will make plays. And he is a one-man wrecking crew. He will instantly make your defensive line better. That's what when I watch film on him, he explodes off the camera to me. And he jumps at offensive linemen. He shreds them apart. He dismantles quarterbacks. He blows up running backs. He is quintessential defensive lineman. But his injury history scares me, which is why I can't take him at one. Well, that's the only reason.
That's the classic Alabama guy, right? Always got the injuries. These Alabama players, Saban runs him into the ground. My thing is that he's like an interior lineman. And,
right.
You know, if you're an elite interior lineman like Aaron Donald, you're worth the number one pick. But the thing is that those guys are hard to find. They're harder to come by. And by and large, your pass rushers, your edge rushers are going to have more of an impact on a given game than an interior lineman will, especially with everybody passing like crazy these days. So it's kind of like, you know, do you really want to spend the number one pick in the draft on a defensive tackle or interior lineman?
Defensive tackle, right.
But, you know,
I agree with you on that.
But, you know, and there's so many options out there for the Browns. People saying trade up, trade down. You know, so Myles Garrett goes one. He still don't have a quarterback. Let's move it along real quick here. We got to pick it up. The 49ers are second. They have a new coach in Kyle Shanahan, who had a hell of a February after the Super Bowl. They finally got rid of Colin Kaepernick out there, but there's been all this speculation about maybe they trade for Kirk Cousins or something like that because he has a connection with Shanahan from their time in Washington. John Lynch is now the general manager. He's a rookie GM. He has less experience than Stashi Brown, even, of the Browns. So what do they do at the top pick if you're running the 49ers?
Well, honestly, if I can, I will try to trade down. I would actually take the Browns model from this and trade down out of that number two pick and acquire more picks. And because at the end of the day, I would want to try to maximize that pick as much as I possibly can. And you could get a good fortune for it. And quite honestly, I would wait until 2018 because they have a ton of holes. They have more holes than the Browns. And they have a ton of holes that they need to fill, and I would personally wait until next year in 2018 to get my quarterback. But if I'm forced to stay here and take somebody, I'm going to take a very good defensive player because right now on my defensive line, I have two good defensive players, so I'm going to take Solomon Thomas, the defensive end, and I'm going to put him there, and I'm going to have him pair him up with Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner, and my defensive line will already be set, and they'll be completely dangerous in blowing up quarterback.
I'm wondering.
So that's what I would do.
I'm wondering at all if John Lynch is contemplating going like Jamal Adams because he was a safety, and John Lynch was a safety back in the day. You know, I could see a scenario in which he might want to do that if he's that guy. But Solomon Thomas, by all accounts, is the real deal. So, you know, he's another guy that I think might end up being a better football player than Myles Garrett down the road.
Yeah, I have a feeling. I'm hoping that we're wrong, though, to be honest. I really hope that we're wrong.
Yeah, because the Browns are going to take Myles Garrett.
Solomon Thomas, he will be a very good football player.
All right. Third is the Chicago Bears. They finally got rid of Jay Cutler. They signed Mike Glennon to a big free agent contract, which was kind of went under the radar. Not a lot to be excited about in Chicago, but Jordan Howard, the rookie out of Indiana, had a great year at tailback. They've lost so many offensive weapons around this team over the years. They lost Greg Olsen, then they lost Martellus Bennett, then they lost Brandon Marshall. Now they've lost Alshon Jeffrey to Philadelphia. Kevin White was a high draft pick, I believe, last year or the year before, but he's been injured for them at wide receiver. I don't know, aside from Jordan Howard, what they have at the skill positions, and there's not a lot going on defense. I even thought John Fox had gotten fired. When I was doing my research on the Bears, I was surprised to see that John Fox still coached
still
the Bears.
There.
Yeah, he's still there. So, and they've been connected to Garoppolo as well, especially considering that, you know, Jimmy G's from Illinois. So, what do you got with the Bears at number three?
Well, they need defense. They need defensive help, like you said. Now, I think they will acquire more offensive talent later on in the draft, but they need defensive help immediately, particularly in the defensive backfield. So cornerback or safety is the area that I would be looking at if I was them. For me in particular, it comes down to three players. Jamal Adams, that you just talked about before, Malik Hooker, the safety from Ohio State, and Marshawn Lattimore, the cornerback from Ohio State. I don't think they could go wrong if they draft any one of those three. For me personally, free safety is one of their biggest needs. They picked up Quentin Dempsey in the offseason, as well as Prince Amukamara at corner. So for me, I would get the best free safety in this draft. And in my opinion, the best free safety is Malik Hooker. And that's who I would take at three if I was Chicago.
I like Malik Hooker. We had the pleasure of watching him for a few years in Columbus, being Ohio folk like we are, and watching our Buckeyes. So Malik Hooker is a hell of a player. Yeah, he's a playmaker. He's one of those guys. He has a nose for the football. He's always around the ball making plays. I think he had a few pick sixes he took to the house this past year. He had a great season, man. I think he's going to be a fine player for Chicago. It's so cool, like, to be a team like the Bears and just, you know, in this case, not have the pressure on you of taking somebody like Myles Garrett when, you know, there seems to be, if you read the tea leaves, that it might not be what it's all cracked up to be, if you know what I'm saying. Like, I agree.
I just wish the Browns would actually honestly have the number two pick instead of the number one pick.
Yeah, and every year, what's weird about that, though, is that every year I've been begging for the Browns to just bottom out and get the number one pick so they don't have to leave it up to anything. They could just take who they want and not worry about it, because anytime any type of negotiation or posturing or any type of, you know, chess moves have come into play, it never works out well for the Browns. And so I want them to just have the number one pick and take their guy, but now I don't like their guy that they're going to take, so I don't know what, you know, I guess I'm just screwed as a fan. The Jags, who seem to pick fourth every year, fourth or fifth, they're back picking fourth again. They got Jalen Ramsey last year. It was a great pickup, and
I agree.
And that worked out really well. They also kind of stole Miles Jack, who was a subject of the draft this time last year, and I believe you were pretty high on, but he really didn't make any impact as a rookie.
And I didn't think so, because he was coming off an injury. I'm more looking for them this year than last year.
And then they fired Gus Bradley and they brought in Doug Marrone, and now Tom Coughlin's running the show. But now nobody has any confidence in Blake Bortles. They had their quarterback thing figured out. Blake Bortles had, you know, a rookie year, then he had one good year statistically, and then a horrible year last year. And all of his stats, what is it, all of them come in the first quarter or the fourth quarter? Like in garbage time. I think he's the garbage time king.
After they were already like, they had to come back a lot.
Yeah. Shout out to Anthony Houston of the HHSR and our fantasy football league. And, you know, go ask him about Blake Bortles in garbage time. But anyway, what should the Jags do with the fourth pick?
Well, the biggest piece missing for the Jaguars offense, because it's all about their offense. They got decent talent. Allen Robinson was who I'm a big fan of. I love this guy. They have him as actually have some decent talent wide receiver. They have, you know, Blake Bortles. And we cracked jokes for years about Blake Bortles. It's the fact that his name doesn't even sound like he's going to be a good quarterback.
And once again, it strikes again, the name thing. It's real. It's real.
It is real. He doesn't sound like a quote-unquote franchise quarterback. He doesn't sound like a quarterback to me. But, I mean, I think he can be productive. I think they have a lot of pieces in place. The biggest thing that they're missing is a running game. The biggest friend to a quarterback is a running back. Now, we talked about the fact that running backs, you know, they're trying to make the come up again, almost, you know, like light-skinned, you know, black folks. They're trying to come back into the picture. So, you know, it's the same thing with the running back. The running back things is real, y'all. They're starting to come back, and the best running back in this draft is Leonard Fournette from LSU. I think if you put him there, he's nowhere near, in my opinion, as good as Ezekiel Elliott from last year. But he is a difference maker on offense, and he will be Blake Bortles' best friend if you put him on there. And now you give these guys or the defense a threat of a running game, and now that takes the pressure off of Blake Bortles to have to make a play every time he drops back to throw. I think that's the biggest thing that they've been missing all this time, and you get an elite running game going on along with that passing game, that passing attack, and Allen Robinson and the rest of that wide receiving core. they're going to make a difference. I guarantee you that that offense is going to change dramatically if you get that guy. That's where I would go if I was
so there. I've heard so many things about Leonard Fournette. I've seen him projected to go in a few different places. You know, it seemed like a little while ago the trendy pick was to say Dalvin Cook was actually better than him, or the trendy thing to say was that Dalvin mm-hmm. Cook out of Florida State was better than him. Now I'm seeing Christian McCaffrey fly up draft boards, and yep. some people are saying because of his versatility, he should be ranked higher than Fournette in mocks and things of that nature. So, but you have Leonard Fournette being more of a three-down guy, it sounds like, in Jacksonville. I mean, I could see it. I could see it. I like Leonard Fournette. I think he's a fine football player, and I think he's going to have an immediate impact on the league. So this may be Blake Bortles' last hurrah, though. I mean, if he can't make it happen.
I agree.
If he can't make it happen with Leonard Fournette and Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee and Allen Hurns and all these guys, and, you know, it's right. it ain't going to happen if it don't happen now.
I agree with you.
Tennessee picks fifth. They, to me, they're the most interesting team in the top 12. Well, aside from the Browns, because they have two picks and everything that the Browns represent. But Tennessee's fascinating to me because they went 9-7 last year.
Yes, okay.
They went, they're picking fifth and they went 9-7. They are better.
The Rams pick.
They have the Rams pick. They are better than their draft position would lead you to believe. Much like the Dallas Cowboys. I had the Dallas Cowboys winning the NFC East going into last season because they had, I think they finished 4-12, but I knew they weren't a 4-12 team. They just didn't have Romo.
Right.
And so next thing you know, they come back, they put a competent quarterback back there, and voila, you got a division champion. So Tennessee could be on the rise because now they're adding the fifth pick in the draft to a 9-7 football team. It came from the Jared Goff trade. Mariota had a solid year, obviously. It seems like they could still use a receiver, though. But what would you do if you ran the Titans?
Wide receiver is definitely a possibility. But for me, their biggest need is cornerback. And my thing was if the guy they want is there, then I would go ahead and draft him because he will make a difference, and that's Marshawn Lattimore. If Marshawn Lattimore is there, Tennessee is going to snatch him up at five. And the only possibility of him being gone earlier is if the Bears actually take Lattimore instead of taking a safety. But if he's there at five, in this particular mark draft, I have him dropping to five, that's who I'm going to take if I'm Tennessee.
Marshawn Lattimore is a fine corner, probably the highest rated corner in this draft. I mean, Ohio State had a hell of a secondary, man, with those two guys, him and Hooker. But
yes, they did.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Jamal Adams is going to go ahead of one of those two guys from Ohio State. But you know, I think that's a great pick.
He very
though.
Well can because I mean, no disrespect to Jamal Adams. I think he's a fantastic football player. I'm a little bit biased because I'm from Ohio, but I've seen a lot of these of both of these kids, and I just think that their talent level is off the charts. And I think for what those two particular teams need in Chicago and Tennessee, I think they fit the bill. Now if they were to switch up and take Jamal Adams, I'm not going to frown at him because I think that's a very good pick for either one of those teams.
No, it gets interesting at six because, you know, we talked about how the Browns haven't had a quarterback since Bernie. I don't think the Jets have had a quarterback since Joe Namath. I'm just saying. So they've been linked to Deshaun Watson a lot, and they've been linked to Leonard Fournette a lot in the mocks for whatever that's worth. But Fournette's off the board, hypothetically, in this case. They go defense first almost every year, but I don't think Todd Bowles can afford to not find his quarterback, man. So, you know, this is a big year for black coaches, matter of fact.
Yes.
Because, I mean, if things go poorly, we could lose Hugh Jackson, we could lose Marvin Lewis, and we could lose Todd Bowles by this time next year. Then where are we? We're screwed.
We got like one guy. Mike Tomlin, we raising the flag for everybody.
Right, and Anthony Lynn, I guess. He's out in L.A. But so what would you do if you ran the Jets there at six?
Quite honestly, I honestly feel that the Jets will not be taking this. Will not be using this pick. I think this pick will be traded. It may well be very well be to the Cleveland Browns, trading up from 12. you're laughing, but I'm I'm going to say this. I'm going to have them picking this player, but I actually honestly believe, in my my humblest opinion, that they're taking this pick for the Cleveland Browns. I don't think that they're going to take this pick at all. But even if they do, I think if I was them and they were, if I was stuck here at six, this is the guy that I'm going to take. I'm taking Deshaun Watson, that quarterback, towards the New York Jets slash Cleveland Browns, if you want to put it that way.
So wait a minute.
The Jets would love to trade this pick, but this is the pick that they need to have.
So if you ran the Jets, you'd be taking Deshaun Watson for the Jets. But
yes,
if they trade to Cleveland, who are the Browns taking then? If you foresee in your crystal ball that the Browns are going to be moving up to six, who are they taking?
Well, you know, Deshaun. While I love Deshaun Watson, I'll get into the things I like about him. For me personally, the dream scenario would be for the Browns to take two defensive players at 1 and 12, and then getting their quarterback by either taking him at 33 or trading back up into the first round and getting him. And out of all the quarterbacks that I look, the most intriguing one to me is Deshaun Kizer. But I'll explain why I like Watson. There's a couple of things with the Deshaun Watson that I like. And even if the Browns trade up, to six, they need to take Deshaun Watson. They, as much as I love Deshaun Kizer, I think they will be better served by taking Deshaun Watson, especially if they're trading up. And the reason why I like Deshaun Watson is this. Out of all these quarterbacks, the top four quarterbacks that we list in this draft, which is Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer, Mitch Trubisky, and Patrick Mahomes. Out of those four guys, Deshaun Watson has started the most games. He's played in 38 games. He started 35 games. Whereas Mitch Trubisky, he's played in 30. He's been present for 32 games, but he only started 13. Deshaun Kizer, because of his idiotic head coach, he's played in 25 games and started 23, when he's clearly the best quarterback on that team. And I'll get to Deshaun Kizer in a minute. And then Pat Mahomes, he played in 29 of a possible 32 games. So, and on the biggest stage, I keep going back to these national championship games, but on the biggest stage, Deshaun Watson has played his best. And I can't discredit that. I mean, as much as I give, Myles Garrett hell for not doing well against SEC teams, you as Deshaun Watson, who's played against the best SEC team twice and shredded their defense twice, and quite honestly, should have back-to-back national championships. And for all intents and purposes, this kid, in the biggest moments, has had the biggest things. And a lot of things about him personally that I like is the fact, he came up in a rough neighborhood. He was actually blessed by his family winning the Habitat for Humanity in Georgia, and he worked with Warwick Dunn operation, and he was able to get them a house, and now he actually does things for Habitat of Humanity. He's now giving back. Those are things that, to me, that shows a sign of leadership. And I think my brother mentioned this before, he has that it factor that you really, really like. Now, from a talent standpoint, he doesn't throw the ball very fast. It's almost like he's forcing the ball instead of actually throwing the ball. He doesn't have a natural arm. He can make the necessary throws to get by. I get worried sometimes about the fact that, you're playing in Cleveland, and the winds and everything else, and sitting up there by that lake. I would love for him to have a stronger arm, but I think it's better than Cody Kessler's, let's just put it that way. So, I think that, he can get the job done. And I think he loves football. One of the things I've noticed about him, he really loves playing the game. He loves football. And the fact that I think because he took a program like Clemson, which wasn't even on the map, and made them a national champion and nationally recognized during his time there, I just think that speaks a lot. That speaks a lot of volumes. And especially for him to be able to mentally handle coming to a team that's not good and making them good and wanting to make them good. I think he will be implanted in the community. I think he is set up to be the face of a franchise, which if the Jets were smart And if I'm running the Jets, that's why I would take him, because I know that I'm going to get a kid who's going to be that guy. He's going to be the guy that's going to be the first one in and the last one out. I question that, though, because of the Jets, because of Todd Bowles, that they have the proper offensive-minded coaches who's going to help him grow. That's my only concern with him. But if he was with the Browns, I mean, we got the quarterback whisperer, right? He should, and he made Cody Kessler into at least a viable quarterback, a quarterback that at least can be a quality backup in the league. When nobody in their right mind thought, they thought that the Browns blew that pick, and at least that Cody Kessler has shown that he can actually play in the league. So if you give him a guy with talent, the drive and the desire, yeah, he's going to. I think he could be successful. I think any of these quarterbacks can be successful if they're given the right opportunity and the right talent and the right coaching.
So
I just think that's where it falls down with.
So let's get into this. So you know there was no real good time to have the quarterback debate, but let's go ahead and crack it open now. And this is okay. probably going to end up being a 2-part podcast, which is fine. Because I'm looking at the time right now, it's going to be a 2-parter, and that's fine. We can do that.
Okay.
So looking at the quarterback, the four quarterbacks you mentioned, Kaiser, Watson, Mahomes, Trubisky. Two of them are from Ohio, actually. So that's Deshaun Correct. Kaiser's from Toledo, and Mitch Trubisky's from the Cleveland area. And then you have two guys that are from the South. I know that Watson is from Georgia, as you mentioned, and Pat Mahomes, I believe, is from Texas. He's from White House, Texas.
Yeah.
So
correct.
So and then you have to, and then obviously you're talking about the Browns potentially trading up and what the Jets should do. So there's a few thoughts I have on this. Number one is, I don't know why the Browns would want to run the risk of not getting their guy, whomever they perceive to be is the best quarterback. I mean, to me, it makes sense to just take them number one. And even though these guys might not be worth the number one pick, you know, at least you wouldn't think.
Not to cut you off, but may not be worth according to who.
Right.
These same people that's doing these damn mock drafts. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
These guys. That's why it irritates me when I hear people say that none of these quarterbacks look like franchise quarterbacks. So how in the world can you say that? If that's the case, then you would never get a college guy to run an NFL franchise, if that's the case. Because the only person who really was a sure thing was Andrew Luck. And you see how the coach screwed that up, because they never put an actual adequate team around him. But yet his talent was so good that they actually continually made playoff appearances until he now, last year, where he got broken up and he's hurt. They can't sit there and say that these guys are not franchise quarterbacks, because nobody knows this. It's the most inadequate position to try to determine if this kid is of these kids are going to be any
evaluating quarterbacks is extremely difficult. And I'm of the belief that there's at least one NFL quality starting quarterback in every draft. You just got to find them. So this idea that teams like the Browns or whatever should tank to get Sam Darnold in 2018, when all we know is going to happen is Sam Darnold is going to get picked apart all next year. And I'm not talking about by defenses. I'm talking about by scouts, by observers, onlookers, ESPN talking heads. All they're going to do is pick this poor kid apart, because his stock's not going to be any higher than it is right now. If Sam Darnold was in the draft, he'd go number one this year. But
correct.
He's the coming back next year
with Deshaun Watson the previous year.
Exactly. And so that's a great reason as to think it makes sense to take Deshaun Watson this year, because he would have been number one had he came out last year, and all he did, or 2 years ago, and all he did last year was go out and win the national championship. So why would you not take Deshaun Watson? But again, here's a few things about Watson. I don't like the fact that he's not from up north to be quarterbacking the Browns or the Jets, for that matter. Because that seems to be a little, you know, it gets dicey when you're talking about Southern guys without the strongest arm playing in those kind of elements. So that's one thing. And when I watch Watson, you know, on the field, like he put up great numbers in college, but his talent doesn't jump off the page. And that's the only thing that you kind of worry about. Like his talent just does not jump off the page. Now, if you like winning, If you like winning, if winning is your greatest metric that you use to project quarterbacks in the NFL, then Deshaun Watson,
he's your guy.
He's your guy, right? He's your guy. If you like stats, then you probably want to look at Pat Mahomes, who threw for 5,000 yards and 41 touchdowns and 10 picks. Whereas Watson threw 17 picks last year, which is a lot, and he threw 30 in the last 2 years, which is a huge red flag to me. But Pat Mahomes, on the other hand, threw for over 5,000 yards and 41 touchdowns. But you have to take Pat Mahomes' stats with a grain of salt because he played in the Big 12 or whatever the hell the Big 12 is called these days.
Right. It's a gimmicky offense that's gonna inflate stats.
Exactly. And he had a game this year where Pat Mahomes, he threw 88 times and threw for over 700 yards in one game, and they lost the game.
It was against Oklahoma, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was Oklahoma or OU, one of those two things. I think it was Oklahoma. It was one of those teams. And so that's my thing on Mahomes. I know that he's been kind of flying up draft boards as the weeks have kind of gone by, and I'm a little skittish on him for that reason because I don't really trust those numbers. And he's got a big arm, but big arm and big numbers don't equal big success in the NFL, and we know that.
Deshaun
Kizer, he kind of looks the part. When you look at him, he kind of looks the part. I like the fact that he's from up north. He's got size. He's the biggest of these four quarterbacks, which is great.
Yep.
He's 6'4", and he's weighing around 230, maybe more than that. Like you said, he kind of got screwed up by Brian Kelly, but what was weird was that when Brian Kelly said that he needs more seasoning and that he's not ready for
Brian Kelly's full of crap. That's sour grapes by Brian Kelly. And this is why I mean not to cut you off, but you know you brought up Deshaun Kizer. This is the reason why I like Deshaun Kizer a lot. Because just like you said, he looks the part. He has a cannon for an arm. He has the ability to run. And his end 2015 Deshaun Kizer would have been picked second overall after Deshaun Watson.
Probably.
And then think about what happened between now and then. He lost Will Fuller. He lost offensive lineman. I think it was Zach Barden. He lost some other offensive talent.
He had an offensive lineman that went in the top 10 last year to Baltimore, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, Ronnie Staley. Yes. And then on the flip side, then he comes back. And then in June of last year, his number one target, Corey Robinson, the son of David Robinson, the Admiral, he quits football because of concussion and his fear of brain damage from concussion, because he had like two concussions already in college, and he just flat out quit. So you stick Deshaun Kizer with basically an inadequate football team because Brian Kelly did not give him any help as far as talent on both the offensive line and in the skill positions. And you put everything on the shoulders of Kizer. First of all, he cut down his development process because he was flip-flopping them with Zaire, Malik Zaire, his entire time while they were there. Couldn't figure out that Deshaun Kizer was the best of the two quarterbacks, which is a bunch of garbage. And then you put him out there with less talent, no talent to help him, and then you throw everything and put it on his shoulders. And now you have sour grapes because now the cupboard is bare. You have nothing left in the cupboard for next season. So now you go out there and you criticize the kid. I think that's baloney. I think that's garbage. And at the end of the day, if you get proper coaching with him, and like I said, we have the quarterback whisperer, right? You get him. You know
they say that about Hugh Jackson, but
that's what they say. You know what I'm saying? So if you're going to do that, if you have this guy who is supposed to be good at developing quarterbacks, this is the guy that you need to have, a talented football player who needs some seasoning, who needs some development, who needs some coaching. And if you get that light to come on with him and you get him in an environment where he can develop slowly, that's the thing. He can't start day one. If you take a guy like him, you have to develop him. He may end up starting like week 10 or week 11 of the football year, but you have to develop him. You cannot rush him. If you do that, I think you have a special
talent. So, that's why I like him so much.
So here's what worries me, though, about Kaiser is I think he's probably the least accurate of the four quarterbacks.
You're absolutely right.
At least his completion percentage.
What he was playing with and who he was playing and all the pressure that he had on him. I think if you get enough talent around him, I think he doesn't have to do as much. You get him a good running game, you get him an offensive line, which I have to credit the Browns. They spent their free agency money on their offensive line and fortified that offensive line and made it stable. Now, it's just a matter of them being healthy. You get them healthy, you get enough weapons around a guy like Kaiser. They're now built to be closer to something like, not necessarily like Dallas, but something to the point where if they have to play a rookie quarterback, they can play him. They couldn't do that last year because they didn't have nobody in front of them. They had no weapons around them. I mean, now if you get a quarterback and you put weapons around him and you give him an offensive line to protect him, then yeah, he doesn't have to do as much. In his accuracy, his decision-making, that's why he needs time. He needs time in the system to catch up to the speed of the game and learn the nuances of the game. But I think you have a gem on your hands if you draft this guy. So I agree with you. He's the most inaccurate of the four, but I think a lot of that is because he felt the pressure or the need to have to make a play every single time he snapped the ball.
I got
to
tell you, Mark,
and I just think that was unfair.
That is a huge roll of the dice because when I think of what it takes to be a great quarterback, and we've talked about this on previous Mark drafts, I think you have a whole metrics of what you believe a great quarterback is. I mean,
accuracy was number one with me.
Well, and not only that, but I think accuracy is far more important than like arm strength. Not that arm strength isn't important, but give me an accurate quarterback all day, and I can kind of make do with the rest of it. I mean,
we got Cody Kessler. He's about as accurate as they come. He's not going to give you.
Your brother loves Cody Kessler.
An 85 quarterback rating. He's going to give you what he has, and he's going to be accurate, but. He's only going to get you intermediate throws. He's only going to get you the 20, no more than 25 yards at that. He's not going to just beat you down the field. So, you play with restrictions when you have a guy like him.
That's also a fair point. I just think that none of these guys are slam dunks, even Watson. And, like, I get what Watson's done. Like I said, if you like winning, Watson's your guy. He throws a lot of picks. The book on him is that he stares down his receivers. His talent doesn't really jump off the page, and he's from the South, and he's the smallest of the four guys. All that stuff kind of works against him. If you like Kaiser, guy's not that accurate. He's big. He's got the strong arm. Not that accurate. Not that polished. He looks like he's more of a project. His own coach coming out of college, for whatever reason, doesn't believe in him, it doesn't seem like, at least not right away. If you like Pat Mahomes, again, you got a guy with a strong arm, put up crazy numbers, played in a college
mentality. I mean,
he played in a college-friendly offense.
Matt Stafford, Jay Cutler, Brett Favre, he reminds me of those reckless type of guys. He's on that borderline of being reckless or just flat out just like freaks of nature because he's got a live arm. He can make absolutely every throw on the page.
So
he's undisciplined.
So why not Mitchell Trubisky? Because he's the only guy we haven't talked about.
Right. The two things that scare me about Mitch. Number one.
I believe his mother wants him to be called Mitchell.
What's that?
I believe his mother wants him to be called Mitchell.
Yeah.
His name is Mitchell.
Yeah, he said, I'm not calling Mitchell. I've been calling you Mitch for 3 years. I'm not going to call you Mitchell. I refuse. So Mitch.
Money-making Mitch.
Mitchie. The problem I have with him. It's twofold. And nobody could give – I've listened to interviews with his head coach, quarterback coach. I've listened to all this. Why was he not starting over Marquise Williams? That's number one for me.
Maybe they're idiots. Maybe their coaches are idiots.
Yeah, I agree. I think they are an idiot. I think he was better of the two quarterbacks. I don't know why he didn't play. But the fact of the matter is he didn't play. So he only played in 13 games. That kind of bothers me. And I know I don't take a lot of stock in this stuff, but I saw his bowl game. The bowl game, he was absolutely horrendous. Like, all the things that scared me about him came to fruition in that game. Now, everybody's entitled to have a bad game. I mean, everybody can't have a great game all the time. But it was the things that I was afraid about with him were the same things that I saw in that game. It just stuck out a lot more. And my problem with him is the fact that, you know, he doesn't play from the pocket. He has, I guess, a decent arm. I mean, really don't know how strong his arm is because of the type of offense that they played in. He seems like he's a decent leader. I don't see him as a fiery rah-rah type of guy. He looks like he's telling him, but I also, and I think, and this has something to say too. Not everybody can play in their hometown. They can't. Yeah. Not everybody can do that. You have to be a special type of cat, both mentally and emotionally, to deal with the pressure of playing in your hometown. Now, LeBron James has been able to do that.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, he's pretty good. And Bernie has been able to do that. But not everybody is made up like that, man. And I just think the pressure of him playing here in front of people who he went to school with, who he lived down the street from, that lived in his area.
They know his mama.
You get the hangers on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think all of that is going to be, I think he is better served, and he's not ready to play week one by any stretch of the imagination. I think out of those quarterbacks that we just mentioned, I think he is the one that is least ready to play, personally, because of how many games he's played and the type of offense that he's ran. I don't think that he is the least ready of all of those quarterbacks. So from that standpoint, I mean, I'd be scared to take him. But most importantly, taking him here, well, I think he would be better served to going to a place like Chicago or going to a place like New York or going to some other city, and Kansas City, for example, but not here. I think he would be better served by not playing here for those reasons.
Okay. This is going to be a two-parter, y'all. I'm sorry. The conversation is too good, man. The conversation is too good. The draft is too major, especially for the Cleveland Browns. We're going to have to make it a two-parter, y'all. So y'all just going to have to sit back and download another podcast, y'all. So, Mark, we're going to come right back with part two of the HHSR 2017 Mark Draft. Thank y'all for tuning in, though, to part one. And we out of here, y'all. Peace. Thank you.